Blog Talk Radio.
Before the Congressional Committee to tell what I knew of activities which might lead to an attempt to set up a fascist dictatorship.
The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it, and he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret.
It's known as the Bilderberg Group. Could their objective be world domination?
I'm Jim Tucker. I've chased Bilderberg for 30 years. I'll never give up the chase. Bilderberg's plan for the whole world is nothing less than world government.
I'm not comfortable with that at all. Who elected these guys to run the planet?
They are the elitists. They feel they should run the world for their own selfish interests.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
Bilderberg is making great progress toward a world government, and only an educated, informed public can stop them in their tracks.
David Rockefeller admits in his own memoirs that he wants to destroy the United States.
What?
He's a traitor!
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
I need you to move off the property.
Some shots were fired.
There's Bilderbergers right there.
The Trans-Texas Corridor is a vital part because we stop it here in Texas. We stop the new world order right here in Texas.
This thing started here. And to save this country, we kill this damn thing here.
Carry out a phrase his father used, and that is a new world order.
Your new world order will fall.
Yes.
Humanity will defeat you. The answer to 1984 is 1776.
All right, everyone, how you doing? My name is Joseph Gibson. How you doing? It's Sunday evening. We're live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm broadcasting from Greensboro, North Carolina. I hope everybody is well and fine tonight. I asked a lot of people to listen in tonight. Usually we do a family and friends night on Sunday evening, but I was contacted by someone in the state of Connecticut that wanted to talk about something else. And I know a lot of you know my background and where I came from and what I'm about, and you understand that I know a lot about the Connecticut prison system, okay? The Connecticut prison system that where I went through in the 1990s, where what I had experienced and what I went through, you can read about, it's documented. Someone wrote a book about my experiences. I was in a federal court for many years where I survived two murder attempts on my life. It's called Behind the Walls by Joel Hodden, and that book's been around now for a few years. So I know a lot about prison corruption. A lot of my family and friends know, because I spent many years, if you do not know about that, behind the walls in a Connecticut institution, Connecticut institutions. And let me tell you something. They are not the Department of Corrections. They are not. They do nothing to correct people. And I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't know about the other states, the other 49 states across the country, but I do know about the state that I lived in at that time, and that was the state of Connecticut. And I'm going to tell you something right now. The prisoners of the state of Connecticut, yes, there are people who belong behind bars. There are people that must remain behind bars. We all acknowledge that. We understand. There are sick people in our society that are beyond rehabilitation. However, the majority of the inmates in Connecticut institutions should not be there. Instead, we strip them of everything they own and have, put them in a concrete box. They're put there for 23 hours a day sometimes and given no type of resources or educational tools to advance. And when they are released back into society, what the hell do you expect them to do? Nobody's going to hire them. As soon as you put down you're a convicted felon on your application, nobody's going to hire you. You say, oh, that's not true. People can get chance out of their second chance. Yeah, look at me. I made it. Yeah, look at me. I made it. Yeah. Not without going through hell first. Read my book. You know what hell I went through. Nobody should go through any type of hell. You know what? You did your time. That's it. It's over and done. You should be allowed to vote. You should be allowed to carry a firearm. You should be allowed to do anything. Because once you complete your sentence, you're free and clear. That's it. Nobody should discriminate against anybody for what they did, because you know what? You did your sentence. The judge ordered you to do 5 years. You did 5 years. That's it. You're free and clear. Over and done. Instead, they put these probation terms over you, these parole terms. You got to report to a probation officer, a parole officer 3 times a week. Who the hell is going to hire you? How the heck? But it's a condition to obtain full-time employment. Of your parole, by the way, at least it was when I was there, paying full-time employment. How? I have to report to you 3 times a day, 3 times a week, excuse me. What employer? Oh, well, I got people on my caseload. They do it, so should you. Come on. It all boils down to common sense. You know, 95% of the people I came in contact with while incarcerated did not really even belong there. I did come in contact with people who did belong there. Like I said, it boils down to common sense. The guy admits to raping and killing a 90-year-old woman. You know what? You go. You're done. Your life's over. You spend the rest of your life in jail. Period. End of story. But you're caught with a half ounce of marijuana driving around with your friends one night on a Saturday night. Big freaking deal. The troops are over in Afghanistan growing the heroin. Come on. You know we've gone over that on this show several times. But tonight's show is very simple. I asked an individual, well, they asked me if they can come on. They're going to promote their organization. Tell us what their organization is about. I don't know too much about it. I'm going to be honest with you. I have not heard of that organization, but we're going to give them a chance tonight, and we have people from all over the country tonight listening. And I have my friend, Dr. Ventura. I'm going to put him on in a second. It's Dr. Ventura. He runs a church in San Diego, California on Imperial Beach, and we're going to put him on. I'm going to kind of like put him as kind of like a co-host with me while we put the other individual who's a guest on tonight. This is very important. We must understand, most of these inmates who are locked up today are coming back out. Are we going to give them a second chance? Are we going to allow them to get a job? Are we going to hire them? Or do you want them breaking in? Because let me tell you something right now. Excuse me. People have got to eat, for God's sake. They've got to provide for their family. We have to. And you say, well, there's programs out there. Listen, don't give me that crap, okay? You can't live off of $7 an hour, $8 an hour, all right? These inmates need opportunities. They need spiritual healing. They need society to heal themselves within themselves. We need to come together and work together, because I don't want someone breaking into my home at 3 o'clock in the morning because he has no money and he's hooked on drugs and he can't do anything else but commit a crime for himself. And you say, well, you know what? There's jobs out there. Listen, we're going to hear different sides of the story tonight. And those of you who are messaging me, I'm going to tell you right now, I got a lot of people on the phone line tonight. Just listen in. You press 1, and I'll get you through, I promise. I'm going to put the guests through right now. The phone number that I'm going to put through, and then I'm going to put Peter Ventura from San Diego through, is 860-88-9338. I'm going to connect this individual right now, and I believe this is my guest that I'm going to have on. So you're on the air. How you doing? My name's Joseph Gibson.
I'm good. How are you? This is Dawn.
How you doing? Where are you calling from, Dawn?
From Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut. Well, you heard my opening. Can you tell me who you are, what you're about, and what you stand for? I'm going to give the floor to you. I'm going to tell you right now, you got free reign. You can say what you want. I got a lot of people that want to ask you questions, maybe, if you're up to it. If not, I understand. But just tell me what you stand for and what you're doing and what your organization is about, okay?
Okay. I'm one of the co-founders of it's a grassroots organization. It's called Not Just Another Number. And basically how it started is our founder and myself and another woman, we were all part of a prison life support group. And through getting to know each other, talking to each other, and talking about the experiences that our husbands are going through in Connecticut facilities, we realized that there's a lot of things going on that shouldn't be going on, different things that we're trying to get the attention of the DOC administration, things that need to be fixed, things that are going on inside the prison that go against the DOC's own administrative directives, things that violate the inmates' civil rights. We weren't getting anywhere individually. So it came to be that our founder decided we're gonna form a group, and we're all going to speak together, and we're going to demand that somebody starts oversight of the Connecticut Department of Corrections. So we're brand new. We just held our first rally at the DOC headquarters last week on Monday under the name Not Just Another Number. Of course, that means not just another inmate number, statistic number, dollar sign number, however you want to take it. Most people had shirts saying, we wrote in my husband. We had a child said my dad. It could be your brother. Can be your father, whatever it may be. They're not just a number. They're human beings, and they may be inmates. And everybody knows when somebody goes to jail, you give up certain freedoms. Yeah, we know that. Like you said, there are people that need to be in jail and may not necessarily need to be in jail, but under the Connecticut laws, if you go to jail, apparently the state thinks you're there for a reason. You give up certain freedoms, but you don't lose your civil rights. And that's a huge problem within the Connecticut Department of Corrections. They have administrative directives that are supposed to protect and provide for the inmates. They violate their own policies, and when they're questioned, their excuse for every decision that they make is, well, we have discretionary decision-making. Nobody's putting these people in check. The governor's passing new laws and new initiatives to help the inmates, and the DOC is not implementing these new laws and these new initiatives, and they're saying we have discretionary decision-making. They're not releasing medical records for inmates who have been sick for 10 months with infectious diseases. It's spreading throughout the dorms. Inmates that have contact visits are more than likely spreading it to their family members outside of the prison. And the DOC has...
Hey, Dawn, let me just interrupt you. Myself, like I told you in the beginning of the introduction, I was in the Connecticut Department of Corrections in the 1990s. And I lived through what you were talking about. I was exposed to TB in 1993 because I had to sleep on the floor in the Whaley Avenue County Jail. And I had to be on medication. I have to be on medication today because of that sometimes. Because anytime I'm given a TB test, they say, oh, you're positive for TB. So I have to be on medication for 9 months because I was exposed to it because they kept 100 inmates sleeping on a floor in a cafeteria, and But that's just the beginning of my story, like I told you. I went through the Department of Corrections. I was in Carl Robinson during the 1994 riot, where four people were killed and over 78 people were stabbed and almost died. I was in that riot. I was in, and then they transferred me to Gardner Correctional Institution, where they set me up and affiliated me with a gang. And I was in a close custody unit where I saw horrendous things that would blow your mind, trust me. And I spent 18 months in 23-hour lockdown. And when we were out and we were allowed to go out for recreation, it was in a little tiny concrete box with walls 18 feet high. You could barely see the sun. Okay, I spent that. And then I was transferred to Northern, the Supermax. I spent 6 months there. So I know the Department of Corrections. I know I've seen, and I was there in the 1990s, and we all know during the 1990s things were crazy. They were locking down prisons left and right. So I understand what you're talking about. But I want to let you know that I have also another person who was an inmate who spent 26 years in the Department of Corrections. I have him on the line, and he obtained a doctorate while being in the Connecticut prisons. His name is Dr. Ventura. And Peter, are you there? Hello, Peter, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line, Joe.
Okay. Peter, can you give this guest your background or tell me what, I mean, because, you know, can you go along, like, go with the flow, what she's talking about where inmates are exposed to these diseases or locked down these dorms, and just go with the opening, what she was talking about and what her organization represents.
Sure.
And what do you think, in your opinion, about being an expert in law, because you have a law degree also?
Yeah, I spent from 1983 until 2010 in the prison system. In 1986, I was shipped out to the Federal Bureau of Prisons because I was standing up for inmate civil rights and religious rights. And I was returned I spent the last 12 in Cheshire. So I'm very familiar with the system itself. I'm very pleased to hear that you have an organization out there that is standing up for inmate rights. And I think that's a great thing. I was involved at one time with another organization from Enfield, Connecticut, called Inside Out. I don't know if you're familiar with that organization or if that organization is still around today. And I did earn a master's inside. I picked up my doctorate outside. I'm working on a second doctorate now, and I just withdrew from law school for a little bit. I have a paralegal degree. I think one of the problems we have is that we need to, in this system in Connecticut, we need an oversight committee. We need a civilian oversight committee. And not just a committee made up of lawyers and doctors, but we need a doctor, we need a psychiatrist, we need a religious leader, and we also need a civilians. And these people should have the right to walk into any prison in the state of Connecticut unannounced. And then they can find guards sleeping on the job and locking inmates up and tormenting them all day. You know, some of the little games that are played that go beyond not just putting people that are sick with people and people that they know, exposing people to hepatitis C and other things that are going on, tuberculosis like Joe had. But there are guards that spend their whole day doing nothing but finding ways to torture inmates mentally and emotionally. Mail is a very, very important thing to an inmate. And some of these guards will take the mail that comes in 11 o'clock in the morning. It'll sit there until the second shift. And the inmates will be allowed to go out for recreation. They'll see their mail sitting on the table. They can't get to it. They'll strip their beds on laundry day and send their sheets in and everything they have, their pillowcases. And then the laundry will come back at about 11 o'clock, and it'll hang on their doors in their laundry bags for the rest of the day. They have to sleep on raw mattresses. And like Joe, I was locked up in the old segregation in Cheshire, and I've been through a few of these riots around the country and food strikes and different things. But I think the main thing that we need, and I've advocated, and I was a jailhouse lawyer, and I was well-respected around the country. Most of the federal judges know my initials on my paperwork, and they respect it. I've never had a pleading dismissed for being frivolous. So I have a little bit of knowledge of this stuff. And 26 years, you get to know a lot of things about the system. And the truth is, a lot of the things that they say are discretionary or not discretionary. But we don't have a legal team that's willing to stand up to it. That's the other problem. But an oversight committee would solve generally 3/4 of the problems that we're having inside these institutions.
And Peter, Dawn, not to interrupt you, but Dawn, is that what you're trying to do? You're trying to create some sort of oversight population within the state of Connecticut that will oversee the prisons? And, hey, we want to know what's going on in there. Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah, pretty much every aspect of the Department of Corrections needs oversight. Another big one that I wanted to add to that, women within our support group are noticing with their loved ones is classification issues. They're taking doing inmate background checks or for crimes previously committed or police reports that are in existence that have information on it, and they're classifying inmates based on police reports for charges that the people were never convicted for, charges that were ultimately dropped, and they're actually punishing inmates for crimes that actually weren't committed. They were never held accountable for in a court of law, and they're using this to classify inmates as level 3s and level 4s when really they could be level 2s. They could be out on work release programs. They could be getting this, other programs, and they could be in a place like Willard Cybulski versus Cheshire.
Dawn, you're right. I saw that. What you're saying is an old story, and no disrespect. What I'm trying to say is during the 1990s, there'd be a guy who's doing 18 months in the cell with a guy who's doing 99 years.
Yeah, we actually have a woman in our support group whose husband will be in for less than a year, and his cellmate is actually a lifer, and what he's going through on a day-to-day basis is excruciating, mentally, and he's been on a transfer list for months to get out of there, and the DOC apparently has used their discretion to decide that they don't need to move him yet.
That's right. But, Dawn, let me ask you this question, right? What do you say to the people out there who say, you know what, these guys, I'm just playing devil's advocate, because trust me, you know I support you. I told you my background.
Yeah.
I'm just doing this hypothetically. What do you say to the people out there, and I know you've come in contact with them? Hey, they broke the law. To hell with them. They belong in there. Let them do their time. Shut up and get out.
Yeah, well, I definitely hear that a lot, and that's one of the things that I'm working on with myself since we started speaking out, becoming public, and trying to get something going here with our group, especially the day of the protest when DOC staff was coming out and people who were driving by were saying derogatory comments. I did have a really hard time controlling myself and my reaction. But I think one of the first things I say is, well, what if it was your husband? Would you feel the same way? Because not everybody's in jail because they're a crazed serial killer and they've done these terrible things. And, you know, some people are in jail for petty crimes, for, you know, small mistakes that they've made, and they're just going to be in there for a little while. They're going to come back out. They're going to be productive citizens. They made a mistake. They're going to jail for a punishment. They're not going to jail to get additional punishment in addition to the sentence they're already serving. Going to jail, being separated from your family, losing your freedoms, and having to live in concrete walls with less than adequate food, with contaminated water, the list goes on. Living in those conditions is punishment enough, but to have to endure what the guards, what the administration, what the Department of Corrections as a whole puts the inmates through on the level of being human beings, that's unacceptable. Everybody knows that when somebody is convicted of a crime, they go to jail. Okay, beyond that, when they go to jail, they're going to jail, they're serving their time, they just want to go home. They don't go to jail to get treated like, you know, worse than animals in an animal shelter.
That's right, Dawn. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely right. And then Dawn, people say, whoa, they're going to prison. Wait a second. What does the Department of Corrections, what did I just say, Department of Corrections, are you correcting these individuals and giving them a chance for hope when they are released, or are they just being locked down in warehouse, Peter?
Yeah, we've actually given them a couple of nicknames. We've actually given them the nicknames the Department of Corruption and the Department of Coercion. We use them interchangeably.
That's right.
You know, you have to understand this also. You have to understand the evolving mentality within the Department of Corrections and law in itself. Back when in the early 80s when they were handing out these massive sentences, and the idea was that, you know, corrections had not worked. Rehabilitation had not worked. So now what we're doing is we're going to warehouse them. And the reason is because their mentality was that if we can stop an individual who commits a crime, and we can incarcerate him. He's probably committed crimes before, and he'll continue to commit crimes, so now we'll just stop him. And that was the mentality. And that carries over even today still with some of the parole officers. Now, listen, there's some good parole officers, some good probation officers, there's some good correctional officers who really, you know, are about their, you know, they're by the book, and they want to do what's right, and they're interested in seeing somebody succeed in their lives. But there are parole officers who believe that their job is to get that person violated and reincarcerated. And the truth is, the corrections system itself, not only in Connecticut but throughout the country, is a system where we have, it's an industry, and the commodity is prisoners. And if you don't have prisoners, you don't have a job. And most of these guards are second and third, even fourth generation correctional officers. And this is a business. This is an industry. It's an industry. Even when you're looking deep in this, nobody's mentioned this, but if you think about it, you look into the redistricting of the state of Connecticut, and there are people who are in Cheshire and other prisons, and they're being counted as residents of Cheshire, Connecticut. And so Cheshire, Connecticut receives more money per population of the people instead of the people
that
are
right.
in census.
That's right, Peter.
Being
you're
counted
right.
of the towns they came from. And so this is a great industry that's going on. It's not just about corrections. It's about money. And there's a lot of money involved in this. There's money in contracts, and there's money in, you know, look at the former governor setting up the commissary. Look at the markup in the commissary. You and I can go to a store for $110, $115, buy a flat-screen TV, and yet the inmates are charged $200 in there. Why? Who's receiving the markup in these things? And so you have to look deeper also. Besides just the treatment of prisoners, there's a whole philosophy behind it, and it's an industry.
But Peter, can you tell Dawn, like for instance, because we're going to give her the floor. I mean, she has the reign tonight. I invited her on, or somebody from her organization. And, hey, she can say what she wants and promote her organization. And there are a lot of people listening tonight. I'll tell you that right now. But Peter, can you tell Dawn how you stay in contact with the inmates in Cheshire, for instance, and how you help them? Because you even tell me personally, because I know you personally, how you help the inmates and try to support them so when they're released, they have an opportunity.
Well, I have a prison ministry. I have a church, and I studied in prison, and I received a master's in theology. I have a doctorate in religious education. I'm working on a doctorate in world philosophy. So I reach out into the prisons through correspondence, and I have some prisoners on a phone list that I allow to call in case of an emergency. And Joe's right. I do have a heart for the prisoners and for those people who want to do right. I just flew to Connecticut from California. I'm in the state of California at my own expense and went out to there because a fellow who was on parole who was violated for a silly violation was about to lose everything he owned. And so I had to go rescue all his property and put it into storage somewhere for him. And if I hadn't, he'd have lost everything he had accumulated while he was out on parole for the last 3 years. So that's one way I reach in. And I'm willing to advocate for him. I do some paralegal work here and there for some of the inmates. Right now, there is one name that should be mentioned, and it should be known throughout not only the Department of Corrections, throughout the justice system, is the injustice that's been done to Michael Kendall. And he's serving a life sentence, and I've been working on his case for 6 years. We finally got some lawyers to look into this thing. You know, there's missing evidence and all kinds of things going on in this case. So if I find a case and I really think we can help somebody who is, innocent, we'll do that. We'll even reach out to the Innocent Project for them. So we do those things. But I have a church in California, and we help, you know, the inmates. The church helps the inmates. They finance sometimes their insurance for their cars when they get out so they can get a job, and we'll help them if we can. But we're limited. We're limited. We're a small church. And so it takes, you know, Hillary Clinton wrote the book, It Takes a, and I'm no supporter of Hillary Clinton, but it takes a village, and it does, it takes a community. And there are programs that are out there in other states that do help inmates. But there are the problem within the institutions is where the problem begins, because if a person can't find hope within, they're not going to find hope without. And there has to be some type of support system on the outside, as you were saying.
That's
in the
right.
Beginning.
That's right. And Peter, that's what I want to get to. And that's what Dawn is talking about. Dawn, do you have any cases, like individual cases that you could talk about that you guys are involved in, or I mean, just anything that you want to talk about that should be brought out into the light and receive some sort of exposure? Because, hey, This show is archived, and I'll tell you right now, you're going to get about 5,000 to 10,000 downloads of this show throughout the week. And I'll keep promoting this show because this is a strong subject. I told you there was a book written about me, and I'll send anyone out a free copy of that book to read. If all they got to do is email me and say, hey, we can't afford to pay for it, send me a copy, I will. But, Dawn, is there any cases out there that need some sort of exposure or help today?
Before you go on, Joe, I have to get off the air right now because I have to prepare for church. I have to do some preaching. I normally don't stop before I get do. But, Dawn, I appreciate all you do, and I thank you. If you have a pencil and a piece of paper, you write this down. My phone number, and that's my cell. You can call me anytime. My number is area code 203. I've kept that number since I left Connecticut, 203-240-0377. Or you can email me at ventura.peter77@gmail.com. And, I'll respond to you. Joe, I want to thank you. I think the subject's an important subject, and I hope your listeners are getting an education because this is an eye-opener. And you have a great day, and thank you for allowing me to come on and speak this evening.
Hey, thanks, Peter. I appreciate it. Thank you. God bless you, sir.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Dawn.
Hey, Dawn, I still got you on the line, right? Hello, Dawn? I might have lost her. Hello, Dawn? She might have been disconnected. Hang on. Let's see. Dawn, are you there?
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Hello?
You were disconnected. I'm sorry, Dawn.
Yeah,
you were disconnected.
I was disconnected. I called back, but I was kind of panicking because I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
That's okay. Did you hear what Peter had to say? Because he left us. Did you hear what he had to say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My question to you, Dawn, is this. Do you have any cases, individual cases, that are in need right now that need some sort of attention or that you're working on or that you want exposure to? I mean, whatever you want to say or do, hey, the floor is yours.
Okay, hold on. I'm actually texting. I just texted, actually, our founder and asked her if she wanted me to mention her loved one's situation.
That's okay. I don't mind. That's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
no
actually,
problem.
She just texted me back and said that, yes, that is okay. So I'm going to start with her because she's the founder. Her husband, actually, Walter Santiago, he went to jail for something very simple as possession of marijuana. However, he has a police report from 10 years ago for a crime that he didn't commit. He wasn't held accountable for the charges that were alleged to have occurred in the police report. However, he is in the highest security level in Cheshire today because of that police report's existence from 10 years ago, which, if I'm not mistaken, they don't even keep records from 10 years ago on your criminal record.
No, they don't. They're supposed to be automatically expunged after, I believe it's 5 years, especially Class D felonies. Yes.
Right. So how they even are going by a police report that should have been destroyed in the first place, there's so many different aspects to this. So there's that. Then there's the fact that why is he going to jail now for possession of marijuana? Why are you even looking at a police report from 10 years ago? Never mind how you got it. But why are you even classifying him today for a police report?
That's correct. And
not
Dawn, you know what?
Conviction.
Yeah, and you're right, and you know what, and you're right, and that's something, you know what, Dawn, you need to get in contact with Brother Peter. He's from San Diego, California. He has an international paralegal service, and he takes cases on like this, and he helps people, like he said. So your founder has my email, and I will.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say too much personal information over the air because you don't know who's listening. And what I'm saying is that you email me, and we can put you in contact with people. And we could try to, get an answer when you were just talking about that
mm-hmm.
particular individual case. But that's important. And you know what? People need to understand, Dawn. Hey, this could be you out there. You could be pulled over. Your registration's expired. You're driving with no insurance. Guess what? You're in the clink for 30 days. You know what? You got a 30-day sentence. You're sitting in prison with a guy who's doing life. You next thing you know, doing 10 years. You know, you got another 2 years. It happened to me. I know. It's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone wants to ask Dawn a question, all you got to do is call me, or ask me a question. 657-383-0616. Press 1, and I'll put you through. So if anyone out there has a question about my case or even what Dawn's talking about, her organization, by all means, just press 1, and I'll put you through and connect you. But, Dawn, like I said, the floor is yours, and please, if you have any other cases you want to talk about, and I'll watch the boards. If someone wants to get through and ask a question, I'll put them through. But what do you want to talk about most importantly?
Well, another one, actually, my husband's case, his name is Jose Fuentes. He's actually incarcerated for possession of narcotics, possession with intent to sell. The morning of his arrest on the narcotics charges, the reason that the police were at our house to begin with is him and I were outside. It was early in the morning. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning. We were arguing in the driveway. We were talking loudly. There was no violence. We were on completely opposite sides of the driveway, which is why we were yelling loudly. One of the neighbors called the police and said, "There's loud yelling outside. I think there's a couple arguing out there." And when the police came, I was in my car pulling out of the driveway, and he was over by the building. We weren't even anywhere near each other. There was no kind of argument going on. When the police came, they said that it's protocol that when they get called to an address for a domestic violence situation, that somebody gets arrested. So he said,
"Wow,
I want her to get arrested." Yep. He said, "Well," and I did research that, and there is some truth to the matter of when there is a quote unquote domestic call in Connecticut, one or both parties needs to be arrested. So he immediately said, "Listen, I don't want her to go to jail. She didn't do anything wrong. Nobody even needs to be arrested. But if it has to be anybody, let it be me." He had the narcotics on him, and he went to jail for the possession of the narcotics and possession with intent to sell because of the amount that he had on, and they charged him with the intent. However, he was never held responsible. He was never brought up in court on domestic charges. He was never convicted. He's not in jail for. He has no domestic charges on his record. However, the Department of Corrections for the first six months of his incarceration denied me visits under the premise that I'm a victim of a domestic violence crime at his hands, and it took me 6 months and about six letters to the warden to get permission to visit him. And to this day, and it's been about 10 months now, we only can have non-contact visits, and that's after having zero visits whatsoever the first 6 months, because I had to go into the administrative directives and find the definitions page, which defines the word victim, show the police report, show the court documents regarding his narcotics charges, send everything to the warden about six times, send a certified copy to the commissioner and say, per the administrative directives, I don't even fit the description as a victim. So for you to be calling me a domestic violence victim, you're violating my civil rights. You're misclassifying me as something that I'm not. I was like, you're being, you know, prejudicial and discriminatory in your decision not to allow me to visit. Their stand has been this entire time that because the police were called for a quote-unquote argument, even though he was arrested and charged with drug crimes and not domestic violence crimes, this is what's going on in our lives right now. And he was actually, he actually applied for early release a couple of months ago. He was supposed to have been released this month in October, and he was actually denied and will be spending the remainder of his sentence in jail because they will not release him to our home address because they are saying that he cannot live with the victim of his crime. However, he was never convicted of a crime against me.
Yeah, he was never convicted. And you know what? Let me ask you this. Look, the whole story you're just telling, I listened to it word for word. I'm getting emails from people. You know what? Look, what a freaking waste of tax dollars, you know? You two are having an argument in front of your house. Big deal. He's got a little marijuana in his pocket. Oh, it's policy. We got to put him in jail. And look, he's locked up. They claim it costs, what, $29,000 or $36,000 a year to house an inmate. For freaking what? Who did he hurt? Who's the victim? Who's the victim? You're just already saying right here, live on the air, I'm not a victim. We're having a discrepancy.
I had to actually go down to the courthouse, and I actually had the court clerk give me a printout that showed that you know, when I walked into the court clerk's office and said, the DOC will not allow me to visit him because they say I'm a victim of his crime. Is there something the court can give me saying I'm not a crime victim? They looked at me like I had 10 heads. And they couldn't believe that
Lord.
I was going through that. The only thing that they could offer me was his rap sheet, and I actually had to send a criminal background check to the public safety in Middletown, pay $50 to get his criminal history to prove that he had no domestics involving me ever. Never mind with this current case ever. And, you know, here we are today. It's still going on.
Huh. Unbelievable. Taking up cash dollars, space.
Yeah.
And what I said at the beginning of the show, there's people who do belong in jail. Hey, even you, who have a husband or a loved one in jail, say the same thing. Look, there's people out there who belong in there. There's violent offenders. There's rapists. There's murderers. Hey, we all agree. They belong in prison. But these people, you know, this guy gets caught with a little bit of marijuana. He's got to go through the whole freaking trip of going to court 23 times, hiring a lawyer, having a public defender, a public pretender. That's what we used to call them in the 90s. And, you know, and you're not getting any justice served. All you're doing is wasting taxpayers' money. But I know there's people out there that have questions, so I want to press one so I can connect them. If you don't press one, I can't connect you. You give me emails and messaging me. You got to press one so I can connect you and put you on. I know John in Wallingford, Connecticut, he wants to get on, and here he is right now. I got him. Okay. All right, John, you're on the air. Go ahead, John. How you doing tonight? From Wallingford, Connecticut, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Well, I agree with this woman, Dawn, a lot because, like, it is really unhuman, like, to put somebody in jail for, like, 1 through 3 years just for, like, a little pop. It is, like, and then on top of that, like, they put them in jail for, like, on, like, these fucking, I don't know, like, just uncruel, like, they're stuck there for, like, 23 hours.
What you're trying to say, John, is you're saying is, look, you got a little bit of marijuana. Look, who are you hurting? Who are you? Yeah, okay, it's against the law. We have to respect the laws of the country. But why house them in a prison cell or a maximum security prison with violent offenders where, you know what, they're only going to become or integrated with bad people and have to save themselves or protect themselves? And like Dawn was saying, she has no contact now with her boyfriend or husband. Why? It makes no freaking sense. They do not even follow their own administrative directives that they have. They don't even follow them. They type up all these administrative directives. I've read them. I know them word for word. I've read them. I did it in the 90s. And just like Brother Peter that was on the show who earlier from San Diego, California, he was one of the best jailhouse lawyers in the country. And he helped a lot of inmates get their sentences reduced or even expunged. So that's somebody you need to pay attention to, Dawn, because he can really help your organization. But John and Wallingford, what you're saying, John, is I appreciate that. But, John, as a teenager, have you been in contact with law enforcement or you had any troubles? I mean, I don't understand. Where are you coming from here?
Yeah, I've been on probation for 2 years now. I'm still on probation, actually.
Okay, and how does your probation officer treat you? I mean, how is that like? What stipulations do you have?
Well, I have a very good probation officer, but I don't know. I bet, like, other probation officers are, like, way worse, but, like, mine's pretty nice to me because I'm nice to her, but I don't know. And I have gotten in trouble for no reason before. Like, a cop tried to arrest me inside my house, right? And, like, I wasn't going to get cuffed in my house because that's, like, not right. I didn't want to, like, see my family. I don't know how to put this in words. Fuck.
You're telling me that the officer came into your house to arrest you and you didn't want your family to witness that type of problem. Is that what you're saying? Or that type of accusation or the cop arresting you? Because it was embarrassing, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you should have never opened the door to begin with. And number two, I don't know how the officer got into your house, but you know what? You and I could talk off the air about that, and I can help you out personally with that. But what I'm trying to do is I want Dawn to get exposure to her organization. And her organization is just not another number. And people need to understand that these inmates that are locked behind these walls today, hey, they're going to be out one day. And they're being railroaded within Behind the Walls. And that is the title of my book, Behind the Walls. And I know a lot. There's a lot of people listening who read my book because I got emails just now while we're on the air. And it's not about me tonight. It's about Dawn and her organization because she's the co-founder of this organization. And we need to get exposure because, like Peter said, there has to be a civilian oversight committee that can walk into these prisons and expose this corruption, expose it, or you know what, even monitor what is going on behind these walls. These prison guards and these wardens have too much power over human beings that are locked away, that have no contact with their family. Like I told you, yes, in the beginning, there are people who belong in there, but the majority of the inmate folks are in there for nonsense. Excuse my language, they're in there for bullshit. They're wasting your tax dollars. They're wasting money on nothing. Okay? So we need to... That's right, Dawn. That's right. And I have... I know I got a couple other people that want to chime in tonight. I wish they would press 1 because they know about the prison system.
I know that Courtney, our founder, actually just messaged me. She said that she's going to be calling in a few minutes. She's just getting some things.
I would appreciate it, yeah. That's great because I want to hear others' opinions. And if other people would, like I said, I'll put the number out there. Maybe you don't know because people don't understand what to do sometimes. And the phone number is 657-383-0616. You have to press 1. You can't just call and be connected to me. You got to press 1. I want to hear from my supporters. I want to hear from my supporters. What do you think about prisoners behind the walls who are in trouble today and they need our help? Look, I was once behind these walls, and you cannot – listen, there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. These people sometimes need help. They need your help because I'm going to tell you right now, your tax dollars – are paying for these people to be housed, okay? So don't complain when you see prices going up and you don't get involved with your... Because I'll tell you right, Connecticut is a prison state. There are over 18 prisons in the state of Connecticut, okay? For a tiny little state like that, that is a lot. And like Dawn was saying, it's classification issues also, okay? They house people who have... very little time, and they people who have a lot of time. Why didn't they do this? Why? It makes, you know, it's very strange. But I got Meriden, Connecticut. I'm going to go ahead and put him on. Meriden, Connecticut, go ahead. How you doing? I'm connecting you right now. How you doing?
Shit.
Meriden, Connecticut, you're on. I got you. Hello? Well, Meriden. Okay, I don't have him. I'm sorry about that, guys. He pressed 1. I'm going to try to connect him one more time. He has a question. It's coming into my studio. Meriden, Connecticut, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, hello.
Oh, hi. Okay, I wasn't sure if I was getting through. This is Courtney. I'm actually the founder of this organization.
Oh, okay.
And I was just able to put my son down.
I'm sorry.
I'm actually
I thought it was
Meriden,
Connecticut.
So.
Waterbury, Connecticut. I'm sorry.
I guess that's what it's coming up as.
Well, I'm from Greensboro, so I thought it was Meriden. I'm sorry. But go ahead.
Oh, that's
hey, what do you
problem.
Want to say?
Well,
whatever you want to say, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say, first of all, to thank you to Dawn for doing such a great job for the past hour. So I've been listening, trying to put my son to sleep right now, but I am just, I'm overwhelmed with passion and anger and all these things that you're making me feel right now. And I just want to say, you know, to anybody who is listening, that you are more than welcome to join our cause. And we are absolutely 100% lobbying for this independent agency to take over. And like Peter said, to just walk in at any point that they need to walk in and check everything from literally, you know, from the front office to all of the corners of every single prison, there is corruption throughout. And there absolutely needs to be a group of individuals to ensure that all of these inmates are safe, and not only the inmates, but the guards as well, because as we do know, there are plenty of employees who are just there for a job, who are there to support their families, and who are not abusing the inmates. But for every one good man or good woman that is employed by the DOC, there are 10, 15, 20 more who do have another agenda. So, you know, this would absolutely be the only way to solve these issues.
And you're right. And Courtney, you're right. When I was locked up in the DOC during the 1990s, there were a lot of good men and women I came in contact with. They were honest.
Yeah.
And they helped me. They helped me. They did. But there's a lot of people also that are no good. They're no good. They're no good. Right. They have a different agenda, like you said.
Exactly.
And you know what? I really do appreciate you coming on tonight and trying to give exposure to your organization. Like I said, this show will be archived, and people can leave comments. And Peter is out in San Diego, California, is a good one for you to get in contact with. And you have my email because you've emailed me. And if you need contact information, and you're right, we need a oversight committee to go into these prisons and monitor what is happening to these men and women. Because there's also women locked up also.
Of course,
we need to monitor this.
And
you know what I wanted to bring up, too? I want to make sure that one thing that's really important that everybody should know, too, and this actually I found out from the ACLU, is that the United States is the only country that doesn't have a Department of Corrections Oversight Committee. As everybody is led to believe, the United States being, you know, the leading country, you know, of all the countries in the world, we are the only country that does not have some type of agency that oversees the corrections department for our inmates.
Wow.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Thank you. When we're at home
watching Locked Up Abroad and we see the treatment that goes on in all these prisons, just remember those prisons have DOC oversight. In our country, we don't. So just imagine what's really going on in there.
Absolutely. And
that's
for the one country, I believe it is the America makes up, I want to say it was 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population. So for our country to have one of the highest prison populations in the entire world, to be the one country that does not have oversight, what does that say? So essentially, this begins in Connecticut with our organization, but there is absolutely no reason why this should not spread to every state and every aspect of what we're trying to do. And it's mind-boggling that there is
what you're trying to say is you're right. It's mind-boggling that we do not have a independent committee or people or civilian committee out there that can oversee the prisons. Because listen, America is a prison country. It's a prison state, Connecticut, like I said.
Yeah.
And we need to have people monitoring what is happening to our men and women who are locked up. Like I said in the beginning, look, there are people that belong behind bars. Yes, I know. There are violent people. There are sick people. But the majority of the people behind bars are not. They're just victims. They're victims of society. They're victims of a poor economy. They're victims of society in a whole because we did not do our part in society to help each and within our own families, even our own families.
Absolutely.
We didn't do our part. We didn't do our part. And that's the point we're trying to make tonight, because you know what? We don't want to see any American tortured and beat down. And there's a video on YouTube that I made a comment on it, and that's how you emailed me and became in contact with me. There's a video of an inmate being tortured, basically tortured. And it's disgusting. It's disgusting.
Yep. Our plan, after discovering that video, our plan is to hold another protest at his next court date. I believe he filed a writ of habeas corpus due to the abuse that he experienced in that video. So October 22nd, he's due in court, and we plan on being there to again protest against this corruption that he obviously has experienced firsthand. And that's the thing, is that these people, they do go to prison for, you know, the faults that they have and the mistakes that they've made. And we understand wholeheartedly that you can learn from this experience, but the only rehabilitation is with losing your family and losing your rights and suffering this kind of abuse that has nothing to do with anything they're doing for the inmates. And at the end of the day, you know, they go to prison for a small amount of time, and while they're there, they risk losing their lives. You know, there are inmates my husband, personally, my husband developed a severe throat abscess this past February, and all because one guard did not like him and refused to tell him he was being called to the medical department. He was hospitalized. He nearly died. His throat closed up, and still nothing has been done to perform any surgery that he requires, of which he requires two. And it's just, it's unbelievable. You know, for a 2-year sentence, I could lose my husband for life. And,
For 24 months. For 24 months.
Right.
And listen, you need to be getting in contact with Peter. He, like I told you, he has an international paralegal organization. And Peter, but he's very busy. But you email me, I'll give you his personal information. He has helped out dozens of inmates within Cheshire Prison to help them reduce their sentences and help them in legal matters like this. And people need to understand, What this woman is talking about could happen to one of your loved ones. It can happen to you. Mm-hmm. What will you do when it's too late and your loved one is trapped behind there? Now, listen, I have a lot of family and friends listening to me tonight. And you know, during the 1990s, I was trapped. And like I said, you can pick up a copy of my book. I'll send it to you for free. I had my neck slashed open, 16 staples, while I worked for the DOC. Okay, and it goes on and on and on. But that's, I almost lost my life September 16th, 1999, Osborne Correctional Institution, okay? Because very important things, I can't get into that right now because it would take a couple hours to explain, but it's all documented. I have the DOC reports, I mean. But what I'm trying to say is I know the corruption in the DOC. I know there's a lot of corrupt guards. They hurt these inmates on purpose. They hurt them. They psychologically abuse them. And you know what? Hey, my next-door neighbor, you, whoever, I know you have a loved one. I understand that. But what about your friends and family? Hey, or people that live next door to you, or people within the community. These men and women are coming back out one day. What do you want to see them corrected? Do you want to see them have an opportunity to regain what they had and become better and correct them, like the Department of Corrections mission statement says? Or do you want them to be worse off and mentally unstable and go out and commit more crimes to hurt people? Is that what you want? Or do you, we should be out there helping each other, you know?
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's the main point that we do try to make to people who don't understand, because as you said before, you know, the people that say, well, they committed the crime, they deserve to be punished in any manner that they see fit. Our answer to that is, okay, so if you think it doesn't concern you, look around you, look at the crime levels that are obviously skyrocketing. I mean, I can tell alone.
No, you're right.
Dawn,
you're right.
Living
you're
in
right.
Hartford, you know, every day in Hartford, there was another innocent person dying. And at this point, all we have to do is, you know, make these people understand that this does affect everyone. If the people in prison were treated just a little bit more humanely, just a little bit more hope put into their hearts walking out of those doors, then crime levels go down.
That's right.
Become safer. You know what I mean?
Well, what
like,
about,
it's really
what about
very
this?
Simple.
But what about this? Well, what about programs that teach them? What about programs that educate them? What about programs that teach them a trade? You know, they have all the time in the world. They have all the time in the world to learn. Why not teach these men and women out there to, instead of coming out and being a prostitute, instead of coming out and selling drugs, instead of coming out and committing crimes, why not teach these men and women something important? And you know what? They can come out and be a beneficial factor to society Why not do that? Don't you? But you know what? Like Peter said, it's a money making business. We got to keep those guys
coming
in.
Absolutely, it runs very deep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very deep.
It's much more of a problem than I would think even a lot of our members even understand. If you truly do the research on every form of our government, this is absolutely an industry. And that is my main quote that I love to use with the commissioner, Scott Semple of the Department of Corrections in Connecticut, is who does this benefit? Everything that you do, who is this benefiting? Not the public, not the inmates. It is benefiting your pocket and the pockets of all of our government. So it really is much more in depth than we even know, and no possible way to ever control it completely. But if we can just do a little bit and create this committee, create this agency, oversee these things, then we could be helping hundreds of families, thousands, millions, children who are without their fathers, their mothers. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is that we are all human beings. Inmate lives matter, black lives matter, white lives matter, you're purple, it doesn't matter. It's all human life has a purpose, has a value, and that is really the root of our entire organization.
That's right. I got somebody from the state of Wisconsin who wants to ask a question, so they just pressed one. So I'm going to put them on. And by all means, if you need any help answering a question, I'm there. Like I told you in the email, I know what I'm doing, and I'll help you out. And like I said, the floor is yours, and
sure,
this show is yours tonight. So I'm going to go ahead and put them through. I'm going to put them through right now. Go ahead. Hey, how you doing, Wisconsin? How you doing? Mike from Wisconsin, how you doing?
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Hi, Mike.
Boy, what a story. I'm telling you, this is like fantasy land, you know? It's yeah, I mean, you know, it's terrible that the problem is the corruption system or the prison system, they monitor themselves. Just like this lady says, they don't have anybody monitoring them, you know?
That's right.
So if they do wrong, what are they going to do, slap their own hand? I mean, you know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, and not to change the subject or anything, but, you know, our president is doing this nuclear deal with Iran, and it's the same thing there. They're going to police themselves. And we've already, you can see what it's doing to the prison systems. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking, you know, it's like fighting City Hall. Do you agree?
Yeah.
No, you're right, Mike. Yeah, you're right, Mike. Like Peter said, he hit it right on the head. You have to have an independent oversight group of people who are unelected, not paid, who are volunteering to oversee our governmental institutions. And what we're talking about tonight is the prison system. And we're talking about specifically the Connecticut Department of Corrections. And we have to have an oversight committee. And I hope this organization becomes that oversight committee. And I'm going to work hard through phone calls, through writing letters, and through my listeners tonight. And I'll promote this show. I swear to God I will, because I have personal experience, and you know that, Mike, because you're a supporter of this show. You've called in before, and we have to help these young men and women reintegrate into society, right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, what's the sense of? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
are you there,
like
Mike?
This lady. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, what's the sense of putting these people in prison so they can do what they're so crime, okay? But they're not getting any guidance or anything, and, you know, and then you know, the lucky ones that get kicked out of the door, you know, they're like a fish out of water, you know?
Yeah, you're right, Mike.
But listen, whoever's on the line live, you have to watch your background noise, because, listen, they're very sensitive. Any type of background noise will disrupt anyone. If you have any type of noise in the background, you have got to be careful, okay? So anyone who's on. But anyway, Mike, hey, listen, Mike, just tell the guests tonight your background and where you come from, where you grew up, and what you're about, because that's important. I want every caller tonight to understand that, because we just had John, he's 16 years old, call in from Wallingford, Connecticut. Now, you're out in Wisconsin. Just give me a little bit of background about you and how you grew up, because you were a dairy farmer, right, Mike?
Yeah, but I was brought up in Wallingford, Connecticut.
Wow.
And you know, the thing is, you know, people make choices, okay? But sometimes, you know, just like this young lady, you know, her husband got caught up in the system, I would say, you know, and she feels helpless. You can just tell
yeah.
she does, you know,
yeah.
and it's a, you know, we give people public defenders because they can't, you know, afford to defend themselves. Why isn't there, like, this lady, why isn't there groups that can, you know, help people that are being railroaded, so to speak, you know, into something that, you know...
What? That's a good question. That's a good question. Can you answer that? I mean, why isn't there groups out there in Connecticut? Because I'm not from Connecticut anymore, but and I know when I was there was none. But why aren't there groups today that can help you?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, there are groups that do advocate for prisoners. I know this personally from reaching out to them. Yet they are charging upwards of $8,000 to take on a case
oh, my Lord.
My husband. So, you know, it is a good question as to why there is not some sort of free of charge, or at least maybe like a sliding scale type fee for these services. And essentially, that is our main goal in the future. We are, you know, a grassroots organization at the moment. We are rather small, but... the plan that my husband and I have is to turn this organization, if we could be that agency, to not just walk into those prisons and ensure that everything is going as it should, but also to provide those legal services, counseling services for inmates, for their families, even for perhaps troubled teens who are heading down the path that you know,
you just hit the nail on the head. Not to interrupt you, you just hit the nail on the head. To prevent these troubled individuals who are heading down that way, right?
Absolutely. It starts very young, I can assure you. You know, even in my husband's case, you know, his childhood, everything about the way he was raised, the things he experienced would have been very different had some type of organization like this existed. And that's really where it begins, is, you know, focusing on the families of these inmates to help them, to give them the support that, you know, we have found in our organization. And, you know, it's unbelievable to see these children, you know, when you go to visit your loved one in prison, to see how many kids are there, you know, going through what we're going through and not understanding it, and there needs to be an organization.
All the children that are missing their mother and father tonight.
Absolutely.
You know?
Exactly. That's really what
it
comes down to, is that you need to focus on every facet of this entire issue to try to tackle it. And, you know,
For those of you who are one-minded, and I am getting comments in my box, listen, for those of you who are one-minded, marijuana, who did this person hurt? Who? I'm going to tell you something right now. Those of you who don't know, who you're typing irresponsible comments to me or emailing, let me tell you something. Your government grows the drugs. They ship the drugs into the city, okay? Your troops are over there in Afghanistan growing the poppy plants. We can get into that later on or during another show. I know about your new world order and what you're doing. We're talking about a localized issue right now. We're talking a little bit of marijuana does not hurt you, okay? It doesn't hurt anybody. Am I right or
Absolutely.
Wrong?
Absolutely. You're correct. And at the end of the day, these people are being treated equal to that of a murderer or a rapist or someone who's done horrible, horrific things to people. they're being treated exactly the same as someone like that. So, you know, people will say what they want. There will always be naysayers. There will always be people that do not understand. But like Dawn said, what if this was your family? What if this was your husband, your father? At the end of the day, we all bleed the same color. At the end of
you're
the
right.
day,
you're right.
the only thing
you're
that
right.
matters is the kind of people that we were. And, of course, there are people that deserve to be there. But these people are good people. These are men and women with good hearts, who have good intentions, and who will come home, and if you ran into them on the street, you would never know, and you would treat
That's
them with
right.
just as much respect as the next person that you come across. So,
as the host of this show, would you have known that I was in prison from 1991
absolutely
to 1999? Right?
No, not at all.
Yeah. I got someone else who wants to call in from Connecticut, Meriden, Connecticut. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, live. Go ahead.
This is Joe in Meriden, Connecticut. I was asked to call in. I don't have too much to add, but you know, I could speak a little bit. And you're right. There are plenty of people that belong there, but the majority doesn't. The person who gets picked up with you know, marijuana, it used to be legal years ago, and now it's illegal. You know, it's the money factor, of course. And you know, you're talking about reducing crime and everything and doing something. Well, that's just it. You see, I don't think they want to reduce the crime. I think they want as much crime as they could possibly handle. When they get scared is when too many people come out. That's when they get scared, and that's what they don't want. The crime, arresting crime, let's face it, they all have quotas. They're going to sit down here, and they're going to get somebody going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit because they have to make quotas. They're not here to serve and protect. They're here to serve and bring in the cash. That's the name of the deal. You know,
yeah.
I said it before. We need a grand jury. You were talking about getting pulled in for a domestic dispute, and he had something on him or whatever. Well, if it went to a grand jury before the arrest, it may have never happened. Get the deputies walking the street, and let them make the decision on what's right and what's wrong, and then let the grand jury decide. But then again, you see, now there's no money, and I don't think they want that. I think they want the crime, but they want it to be controllable.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
a
right.
good point.
Yeah. But Joe, let me ask you. What about the men and women who are in there? Are they controllable? Why should they be controllable? They're human beings. Why should they not be allowed? Listen, for God's sake, it's called the Department of Corrections. Are they correcting you? No. We know that, obviously. What did you just talk about? Crime. It's increasing. They're not correcting anybody. They're not giving anyone any opportunity. What did she just talk about, our guest tonight? She can't even see her spouse. She's not even allowed to visit her spouse because of EEOC policy. And we talked about this, about many other issues. Policy, policy, policy. These policies don't make any freaking sense. We need common sense. And, Joe, how do we get these men and women to come out of these prisons and not commit another crime, because we all in society need to help these people to grow? And I know you've done your part, because you've been on this show before, and you've offered jobs to people who were unfortunate and didn't have nowhere to go. What do we do to educate these young men and women? Where do we go? Where do we go from here? I just don't know.
Well, I don't know. I didn't offer jobs. I offered help. I offered help in the form of learning something with your mind and learning something with your hands, so that you could do something throughout your life and be more of a benefit to whatever employer or whatever job you seek out. If you've got a correctional system that is totally not a correctional system at all, I don't know what we can do when those people come out. Because, you know, like you said tonight, we said it over and over again, when you get out, and if you do get a job for $7, $8, $9, $10 an hour, there aren't too many days your employer is going to let you take a Tuesday off, then take a Wednesday off, then maybe a Thursday afternoon, and so on and so forth, before you're out looking for another job. So the problem begins with that. And like I said when I first called in, I think it's about the money. It's about the quotas. It's get this person out and get them going again in society, but then lock them back up again, because it's just a big money go round is what it is. And what they're doing is good, and what they're trying to do here, and let's hope they keep going and after their husbands, boyfriends, or whatever get out, that they just don't give up and they keep going, because this is exactly what we need. Because, right, you can't talk to these people because they don't want to talk to you. I was on this call before. I've called into a prison, and I'm not going to elaborate on it right now, but I've called a number of times, and I finally got a hold of one woman about something I had sent in, and after a 20-minute conversation asking about where this parcel was, she told me that she was the one that's going to make the decision and she's not going to allow it, rather than just telling me that to begin with. So they sit and they hide behind the phone, they hide behind the desk, they hide behind their badges, and for what reason? Evidently, something's going on besides the money. I don't know what it is.
You're right, Joe. You're right. And you know what? Hey, Dawn, and I forgot your name, the one that's the founder of the show. What's your name, ma'am? I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's Courtney Santiago.
Courtney Santiago, listen. We want to see your organization succeed, and I will promote your organization. For whatever I can do from here in North Carolina, I will. Listen, I know Peter, who has a church out in San Diego, California. If I ask him to help me, he will. And I know that for a fact. So you've got more supporters here tonight already. And I hope more people will download the show and support you. How can they contact you?
Oh, we have our main website, which is not just another number, ct.com. There you can find our email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, any form of social media essentially that we have. They can contact me as well as any of our other members to try to get involved and, you know, to just show support and spread the word about the organization. And like I said, we hope to, you know, become very well known in Connecticut, but also to inspire other people to maybe even start their own chapter of this in their own state. So we can really, you know, tackle this issue nationwide. So they can absolutely contact us. And, you know, I also want to thank you for responding to my email, to my YouTube comment. And, you know, we really didn't ever expect to have this kind of a response. So it's a very good thing to hear. And
You're welcome. But I got one other person. I don't know if this is the person already on the line, but hang on.
I have one more thing to add before we hang up, too.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, about your organization there, I just wanted to say this. I don't know if I should say it now, and I don't know how to say it, but I'm going to have to, because otherwise you'll never know. When you create your organization, I think, personally, this is my opinion, and this isn't legal advice because I'm not an attorney, thank God, but I think you should do it legally, and rather than putting your personal name out there, because I can find you. Matter of fact, I just did. I found your house, your street, and everything else. And you know what? I don't think you want that. I don't think you want that out there. So I think you should do it legally, and you should form it as an entity or something and then work behind that. In other words, mm-hmm. do it the right way and start off the right way.
Right.
Well, I'm sure she'll take your advice, Joe, and I understand. But you know what? Maybe she don't care, because like me, I don't care if my name's out there, because you know what? We're standing up for something that's right. But listen,
yeah,
I got another.
You asked if we had any stories. I'm like, Courtney, are we saying our names or what? It's like, you know what? Go ahead, because that's the only way anything's going to get done, because honestly, so many people have said to us in the past week, oh, it's about time someone did something. It's about time. And I know, because I'm forever contacting the DOC's administrative offices several times a week, and the only way to get things done is to tell them who you are, because they need
that's
to know
right.
that they need to know who's calling. If it's just some anonymous person saying, hey, I want this information, no, this is who I am, this is who I'm calling in regards to, and this is why I want their information. If they know that there's names and faces that are going to hold them accountable, then they're going to be a little bit more responsible.
Absolutely.
I think I've got another number that's been waiting for a while, so I just want to make sure. I don't know who it is, but it's the phone number 413-584-8966. So I don't know who that is, but I'm going to go ahead and connect you. So I think I got you now. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you tonight?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Go ahead and say what you got to say. You're on the air live.
Thank you. Yes, no, I've been listening on my radio. Unfortunately, I missed the beginning part of the show, but I caught it just towards the end. Hopefully, the other co-founder recognizes the voice.
Yes, I do.
My husband's currently incarcerated in Connecticut as well. I reside in Massachusetts. And I just wanted to kind of pipe in. I'm not even sure if it's been covered. I know it's touched upon a little bit, but there's not support out there for the family or the wives. And this organization has been a lifesaver for me and my family in so many ways. I don't even want to get into the frustrations of dealing with the Connecticut legal system at all. My name's Rebecca, by the way.
No, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. Say what you want. Listen, I got a few minutes left. Say what you need to have to say. I always guarantee everyone the floor, and I promise everyone will get through, and I don't lie. I'm not CNN or Fox News.
I appreciate that. I know, like I said, I'm not sure if it was talked about or covered before, but more than just the DOC system, I know I heard Courtney mentioning on it with somebody was touching on it with the representation and the whole nine straight just down the line. I'm staying with this organization even after my husband does return home. With the time that he's doing and going forward with it, because I was absolutely shocked. It was a total eye-opening experience for me to go through this, to find out that something as simple as a violation, a nonviolent one, would place my husband in the position that he's in, doing the time that he's doing, and yet we can see everywhere on the news a doctor can take a life and walk away with nothing more than probation, never step foot behind bars. And
that's right.
It just shows me, my whole thing I take away from is justice is not blind. It depends how fat your wallet is.
You're right. But if you don't mind me asking, who are you and where are you calling from?
My name is Rebecca. I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Okay, that's fine. Thank you. And you're right. And you're absolutely correct. And I appreciate you calling into this show. And I believe by what you said, you know the organization. That's great. Everyone from your organization to contribute tonight because you know what? It needs to be heard. And I will give you a voice anytime. And if you have, listen, we really talk on worldly issues and national issues on this show, but I'm from the state of Connecticut. And I always give everyone a voice. And if someone contacts me and says, hey, I have an issue I want to bring out to the open, I will give you that opportunity. If you listen to previous shows I've had, listen, this is about you. Without you, I have no show. And I want to hear from people like you because we got to make a change because we have to understand the times we live in today. That's the title of this show. And if we don't understand the times we live in today, how the hell are we going to plan for tomorrow? We'll never get there. So, you know what? It's about you. That's what it's about, and anytime you want to contact me in the future or if you have a problem, by all means, you got my email, you already did it, I will give you any time you want. Hey, it's on my dollar, don't worry about it. You can say what you got to say, and I'll put you in contact with the right people to help you because I know your struggle. I know what you've been through. I know. I've seen it firsthand, and many of my callers tonight know what I'm talking about. So if there's anything else you want to say, go ahead, because we've got about 6 minutes left. So the founder of the program, if you're still on the line, you can wrap it up real quick, okay?
Yes, I am. So just basically in conclusion, anyone who would like to contact us, absolutely do so. We can only hope to grow, you know, from the promotion that you're giving us as well as all of the other avenues we're taking. And at the end of the day, like Joe said, absolutely, we are going to go and make this organization official in every legal way possible. But we also do want everyone to know, whether you support us or whether you do not, that we are not going away. We are the voice of the people who do not have a voice. And, you know, I put my name out there. You may be able to find all my information, and that is just fine because you should know the name. Remember our name because we represent all of the people whose names are now represented by numbers, and that will change. And
hey,
basically, that's it.
All right, hey, thank you very much. And everyone who called in and supported the show, I appreciate it. Oh, you're welcome. And by all means, email me. Anytime you have a problem or, hey, you got something to say, email me, because I'm from the state of Connecticut. And like I said, anyone who wants a copy of my book, trust me, if you read my book, you know what the hell I went through. And I will
absolutely
send it to you for free. I will send it to you
absolutely
for free. All you got to do is email me. And listen, God bless everyone. God bless everyone who listens tonight. And listen, this is a subject that's very important. The prisoners across the world, even especially the United States, need to have a voice and need to be heard. Because one day, they're coming out. They're going to be your next-door neighbor. They're going to be your co-workers. They're going to be right with you. And we want them to do good. We want them to progress. We want them to do right. We don't want them repeat. We don't want them to repeat a felon. We do not want them to hurt you. We do not want anything. And I'm not trying to say anything sarcastic. What I'm trying to say is, listen, we all have to feed our families. We all got to try to do what is right. But the society gives us such freaking, it's so hard to say. I mean, there's so many words to say. There's so many restrictions. It's just not right. And I think we covered a lot of that tonight. I think we really did. And with the guests tonight, you were really special. You were awesome. You talked about very important things. I thank you. And this show is archived. And like I said, anytime you need help or you need a voice or you want me to contact people as the media, I will do that for you, I promise. And
thank
just
you.
Email me. I will email you. And thank you very much. I really appreciate
thank
you contacting me.
We appreciate you
God
having
bless
us. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're
God
welcome. You're welcome. You're very good people. You're very good people, and I know you're doing the right thing, and that's what's important. Take care,
thank
everybody.
You.
Good night.
You too. Take care.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
Making a stand, and we're waking everybody up that 9/11 was an inside job, and you are the minority. You are the cowards who don't know the truth. You're the people that serve this evil system. You're the people that serve a system that hurts innocent men, women, and children, not just Iraqis, not just Afghans, not just Africans, but the people right here in this nation. You serve a new world order that attacks and feeds on you. And I'm here to tell you that you will be defeated. Your hours are numbered. We've got the energy. We've got the life force. All you've got is evil backing you up. All you've got is greed and liking to look at yourself in the mirror. Because deep down, the New World Order is a pot-bellied, chicken-necked ninny. And all the armor and all the weapons are nothing. You are nothing compared to good. You are nothing compared to life. And you will be defeated. I want the individuals out there, I want free humanity to turn themselves loose, to cut the chains loose, and to use the end of that chain to slap the New World Order right upside the head. You've got the power. You want to know who can defeat the New World Order? It is you. You're the individuals that are going to be able to defeat this system. You're the individuals that are going to be able to take down the New World Order. It doesn't matter if Ron Paul wins. It doesn't matter that they rigged the election. What matters is that we're starting to stand up. We're starting to move. We're starting to find our legs. We're starting to build our muscles. We're starting to realize that we do have power, and we can work together, and we can take action, and that the naysayers are a pack of weak liars who have never had any successes in their life and who are upset and frustrated to see us beginning to have victories against...